Dr. Young, good morning. You are a psychologist and the director of the Center for Internet Addiction Recovery, and you are also a professor of management at St. Bonaventure University. So first of all, I was wondering, what do you think makes someone addicted to the internet?
Well, I think there's a variety of things that occur. You know, for the most part, what you're asking is what are the risk factors? And I think research has pretty much found that anyone with a computer and access to the internet could get addicted. You know, any age group, any race, any culture. The issue becomes the kinds of things people get addicted to and sometimes the reasons why, which do vary. For example, women tend to do more you know, chat rooms and relationships where men look at porn more online. So we understand that there are certain reasons in terms of gender that are kind of stereotypical. We also look at people that also have suffer from depression, low self-esteem, that also make them much more likely to become addicted to online activities. You know, they get depressed, they go online, it serves as a distraction, and then they feel better for that time that they're online. So it is something that we've started realizing that there are certain correlations, if you will, of certain problems that people have and why they get hooked.
Okay, and I know this question is maybe a little bit difficult to answer, but do you have an idea of how many persons are addicted to the internet in the U.S.?
Well, a recent study actually conducted by Stanford Medical School suggested 1 in 8 individuals suffer from internet addiction, and that was just Americans. So I think we do have some estimates, 1 in 8. That number becomes higher in China, Korea, Taiwan, where I believe it's more like 30% of their population may suffer from this problem. It does vary from country to country, and again, like in America, the problems you know, aren't as concentrated versus like in China, it's a lot of the online games.
Okay.
So we're starting to see kind of cultural differences as well.
Okay. In your studies, what are the different types of internet addictions that you have highlighted? I guess there's a difference between adults and children. So what would be the...
Well, that's a good question. I mean, what are the subtypes? And there are certainly, you know, internet use is so broad and so varied that you could be talking about people getting hooked on, like I say, adult sexual content. That could be one category, if you will, cybersexual type of addictions. Another could be online gambling sites, virtual casinos, poker sites, any kind of like traditional games that people can get hooked on. Then you have the online role-playing games, which are not quite like poker, but they're these virtual environments, these like World of Warcraft, EverQuest, Call to Duty. Mm-hmm. These are online multi-user role-playing games where they're kind of these persistent virtual worlds, and people can come in and out of them and take on characters. So it's not quite like playing poker or blackjack or, you know, something like that online. And then probably the other kinds could be relational in nature, social networking sites, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, people that are spending an enormous amount of time on these activities, not for work, not for a general purpose, but just out of loneliness and that need to connect. So they're using the social media to reach out.
And do you think those websites, for example, the online games, do you think the way they are designed is one of the reasons why people would get addicted to it? Do they do something to attract people and then have them stay online more and more?
Yes, that's even clearer. You know, on the boxes, if you buy the games, it says, you know, this one's addictive. And so I think they have multiple ways of pulling people into the fold so that they have, you know, becomes kind of fun, but it becomes also something where for those who get hooked, they prefer who they are online. meaning that what they have is an opportunity to, if you're a 16-year-old kid with low self-esteem and you really are very bright, but you're understimulated by school, and all of a sudden, hey, I can go online and I'm a great warrior on this game, and I can become somebody quite important, and other people listen to me, it really becomes an ideal place for them to, you know, addiction is a strong word, but they like to spend a lot of time online because then they like who they are better in the game versus then when they click that button off, they don't really like who they are. They're not happy with themselves or their life. So it is something that people can become addicted to, and the games themselves create an environment where people can build relationships and build esteem, and it's not always bad. It's just, again, it's like drinking, you know, a few drinks might be okay, but having bottles and bottles of alcohol every night might be bad. Mm-hmm. So it's to the degree.
Sure, yes. And so how do you help the persons that suffer from internet addiction in your center? I think you have some consulting activities.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with clients, if you go to the site at netaddiction.com, you'll see there's a lot of studies on treating internet addiction. And one of the recent studies that was published, I took 114 of my patients and just followed them over the period of their treatment, and then I followed them 6 months after terminating treatment. And, you know, one, I use cognitive behavioral techniques, meaning we talk a lot about time management related to the internet. They have to change their attitudes and their behavior related to computer use. Many times what happens is people rationalize that it's harmless because it certainly isn't like doing, you know, drugs. But on the other hand, it can socially and emotionally be very draining, and we need to address that this isn't just a hobby or a pastime, that it's become a problem. They're not functioning in their life. They're ignoring their marriage. They're ignoring their job. Whatever problems that are occurring, they need to deal with. And so that's a big part of treatment is twofold. One, addressing the underlying issues causing the problem and the compulsive nature, and then two, figuring out ways of changing how they're using the internet, not completely eliminating it, because in our computer technology age, you really can't eliminate it, but it's like food addiction where you just learn how to better live with it.
And do you think that sometimes they have a personal problem that they would have to sort before? For example, you presented some of the person that go online and they prefer their character in the online game, but isn't also a problem of self-esteem or self-confidence? And
and those are the underlying issues that I mentioned. A big part of it is figuring out how to address those. You know, so it could be anything from medicating a person for their depression, just dealing with this abuse in a past relationship that's causing low self-esteem, building their confidence, building some kind of other goals that they have in life that they really haven't addressed. I mean, if I'm dealing with college students, figuring out what majors they want to be in and what they want to do with the rest of their lives. So there are all those other issues. I mean, it certainly isn't just one thing, and it never has been one thing. You know, historically, what I've seen are people kind of, you know, the internet can be anything to anyone, and so you could have the 50-year-old man that's having a problem with his marriage and now going online looking for women to talk to because he's lonely, or you could have the, like I say, a 16-year-old that is feeling very, you know, overwhelmed and insecure at the same time and goes online to find what he's not getting in his real life. And so it's figuring out those things.
And I think some researchers don't agree with your research. I've read something about it. And some people don't think we can speak of the internet as internet addiction as a mental disorder. I was wondering, what would you say to them?
Well, I think, and it depends on what country you're talking about. Like, I know in China, for example, or Korea, Taiwan, they have an epidemic of it. They have government-funded clinics. They certainly have already diagnosed internet addiction is a serious problem. Mm-hmm. They've put a lot of money behind and treatment. In America, we've proposed that pathological computer use be enlisted in our DSM, our Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of research moving towards that direction. You know, with any new problem, for example, alcoholism was first considered just a moral defect of character that people should just be able to buck up and, you know, control their drinking, and now it's considered a disease. It took decades to get to this point where we understand that alcoholism is a problem for people. And so internet addiction, I first identified it in around 94, 95. So we're still talking about something relatively new. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really surprised. I think we still need more research to understand it fully, but certainly that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be a mental disorder. I mean, the people that certainly are being treated for it don't see it as something that's a small thing.
Yeah, and that's true that in 1995, internet was not really as developed as it is now. So.
Yeah, it's just very new. It's a whole new topic. It's a whole new world. Certainly, there's a lot of different criteria involved in classifying things as a mental disorder in a book. But my point is, well, you know, lots of treatment centers have now opened to address this, and people are seeking treatment. So I guess we're really beyond just debating it.
So we'll still have a lot of work to do.
But I think we do, you know, in terms of putting in the infrastructure to help people get treatment. And and certainly, like I know in America with funding, you know, once it becomes in this DSM, then it just allows people to get reimbursed for those kinds of treatments.
Well, Dr. Young, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. You know, it's very good to talk about it, and I'm glad that programs like this exist to help educate people.